You're listening to Artbank on 95 BFM.
That was John Carroll Kirby, and you are now live with Artbank. I'm speaking to Tendai Mutambu about Notes for Tomorrow, which is a new show at Te Uru, which is put together by the Independent Curators International, and it collects a huge range of artists, and each artist has been selected by a contributing curator, so you get this wonderful slew of practices from all over the world. It's really exciting. Yeah, how's your morning going, Tendai?
Morning, Theo. My morning's going well. Pretty slow, but relaxing as well.
Oh, that's good to hear. How long have you been with Te Uru in your curator position?
So I started at Te Uru around mid-year last year, and yeah, I was invited by the director Andrew Clifford to take up a post as acting curator on a maternity leave for my predecessor Chloe Gagan. So yeah, I've been there for almost a year now.
And is your role sort of, I mean, in this show, you're shepherding a prepared show and kind of, you know, adjusting it maybe a little bit to suit both the architecture of the gallery, but also adding in Ariz Katki's work to kind of localizing it a bit. Is that often like the kind of nature of your role as curator at Te Uru?
The role varies really. We have a whole kind of range of shows currently on offer, and as well as ones that are coming, and some of them are more like project management roles where I'm kind of, as you say, shepherding existing projects, touring exhibitions like Stars Start Falling, curated by Hannah Hiva Rose, which came from Ngamotu in New Plymouth. And then other projects are completely curated from the ground up with my colleague, Connie Brown. And this one in particular, I said Notes for Tomorrow, we worked with Sam Aislaby, who's an architectural graduate and exhibition designer. So yeah, there's a great variety, which is one of the reasons why I was interested in taking up the job, is that I get to sort of work with people and support them as curators, and then I also get to do some projects of my own.
Yeah, because we spoke to Hannah Hiva about that exhibition, and it did feel like it's quite a nice thing that there's a space like Te Uru, which can, you know, look at some of those exciting shows happening around the country and maybe allow them to travel a bit. Because, you know, often an exhibition is so much work, it's so much preparation, it's so much historical research or whatever form of research it might be, and then it gets, you know, 2 months and then that's it.
Exactly. And so, yeah, I think that's something that Te Uru has been very good at historically and would love to continue as being an outpost or being a place for sharing some of that work. So much of it goes into, yeah, like you said, so much labor goes into making these exhibitions. And for Star Start Falling in particular, it's quite special to have Tijuana's works in Tamaki Makaurau. And also given that she had a solo exhibition in the early 2000s at Lotto House. So it's kind of like a homecoming in a way.
So this exhibition, Notes for Tomorrow, is kind of a project by the Independent Curators International, which is, like it sounds, sort of a international alliance of curators. Mm. How would you describe what they do? It's kind of a little bit, you know, it's a little bit ambiguous in the exhibition itself.
Yeah, so Independent Curators International is primarily based in the United States. And it's an arts organization that focuses primarily on the role of the curator in contemporary art. So what they do most of the time is connect practitioners from around the world, people from different regions, different backgrounds and generations. And they've created a really great framework for knowledge sharing through workshops, through lectures, through exhibition making. And this particular project is, like you said, is the product of several curators coming together, each picking an artist from around the world and contributing to this conversation around the sort of present conditions, the moment that we find ourselves in. And so that's kind of the overarching remit. I'd urge people who aren't so familiar with ICI's work to check them out. They do some really great online programming, including a recent series on Indigenous curation and art making.
And so how did this exhibition come to you? Like, was it, did you approach them? Are you part of the, do you participate in the Independent Curators International?
Well, my predecessor, Chloe Gagan, who was the posters curator at Tehuru, had some involvement with ICI through a professional development opportunity, I think some kind of fellowship or something of the sort. And she and Andrew Clifford were the ones who initiated the project. I'm not sure of the specifics exactly, but that's sort of how it came about through those connections.
And the exhibition is kind of framed from a post-COVID perspective. Like, you know, that's some of the languaging that's used in the elevator pitch of it, which might, you know, it could suggest something, honestly, a little bit tacky, like a kind of, like, you know, selection of drawings of masks with like phrases like "we prevailed," that sort of thing, but that's so completely not what this exhibition is. Like, it's really a kind of record of international practice with a broader frame of crisis maybe woven through it. How would you describe the show to people who might be a bit skeptical of a post-COVID show?
I like that formulation, I guess a broader framing of crisis, or something along the lines that you just said. I mean, I'm so often torn about framing things in terms of the pandemic. I feel like we're on one hand saturated. We kind of can't get away conversationally from the pandemic, you know, rightfully so. And then on the other hand, it feels like our conversations don't go deep enough in the sense of addressing the kind of bigger structural issues that the pandemic has brought to the fore. And I think that's something that an exhibition like Notes for Tomorrow can do so well. It's first of all create a space for people to take the time to engage with COVID, with the pandemic, both obliquely and directly. I think there's some of the work that you could say, you know, it's really sort of on the surface, the connections to biopolitics, you know, who gets to live and how and who dies and so on. And then there are others where the link is a little bit more subtle, if you will. So what I hope this exhibition does, and what the team at Tehuru hopes the exhibition does, is that it shifts it into different registers that go beyond some of the short-sighted conversations that we have. You know, of course, the pandemic happens in the context of colonization, the aftermath of the transatlantic slave trade, and all the different kind of conversations that we've been having over the last few decades in the arts, in the academy, in popular culture and everything else. So necessarily, I think, we have to bring all those things into the fold when we talk about the world we live in now. And what I like is that so many of the works in this show bring about a kind of speculative reimagining, sort of imagining of otherwise worlds, which has almost been forced, I suppose. Like, our hand has been forced. We kind of need to imagine with a lot more urgency than before, one could argue. Worlds that are, more hospitable and more equitable.
I think it's often one kind of recurring feeling I had through the show was that it feels like there is a decolonization show nested within Notes for Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And it almost feels like you could flip the terms. You could say this is a decolonization show with a bit of post-COVID hangover. Like, and I think also particularly because it is a show that's designed to travel, you know, there's a kind of a sensitivity to that. So it's a lot of video work, a lot of work that can be produced locally through printing. It feels like it really creates a space for work that has that kind of narrative quality, or like that, like you say, suggestion of possibility and that kind of reading through of possibility. Like, I think about, there's this long form video by, I believe it's Mark Solates,
Salvatus.
Yes, yeah. I've got handwritten notes here, they're a little hard to decipher.
Okay.
But yeah, it's sort of like this very strange version of kind of magic realism where it's also, you know, handmade, and that's one of the most explicitly COVID works, in the sense that, like, the timeline of it lines up with lockdowns, but it has this, I don't know, broad surrealism that feels really interesting to see when, you know, there are so many exhibitions domestically that talk about colonization in Aotearoa, as there, you know, obviously should be, but to link that into a broader context is really interesting, or felt really kind of like, you know, because you don't see these practices normally.
I think it's an important thing to do, to connect. I've always imagined that there is, and there are, in fact, and there can be really, really generative conversations amongst, say, Black and Indigenous peoples across the world. You know, not everything has to be sort of mediated through the lens of some colonial power or something. I mean, even if that's sort of the subtext of the gathering or the occasion, which brings people together, there is a kind of a communing that can happen amongst minorities that's really interesting and exciting. I feel like this, the thing you picked up on is really astute. There is something here going on about decolonization and what it looks like to bring some of those voices into the same place, into the same room.
Well, one of the interesting things about the show also is that you've, as the local, as the curator of the local iteration, you've added an artist, you've added work by Aries Kutke. And I was curious, what made you choose his contributions?
I think, I guess, yeah, the decolonial framework is something that's present in Aries's work. So Aries is currently based in Mumbai, but has been in Aotearoa for quite some time. And in fact, he actually has a solo exhibition, or actually a two-person exhibition with Kadim Ali in New Plymouth at the Govett Brewster at the moment, which I'd urge everyone to check out if they can. But the works in the series, the two series that we've included, one called It's Never Too Late to Learn, which is originally in 32 parts, but we have five of the pieces in the show, consists of vintage muslin handkerchiefs that have been embroidered with cotton thread. And Aries's practice is very much invested in how there's a history of form, a history of making, one which in his case is matrilineal. And so I was really interested in, I guess, the kind of feminization of the processes of making that he uses, and how that relates to queerness in particular, as far as his own identity, but also this idea of him being a migrant is very much present in that series, in the lessons work. So I felt like there was necessarily a very intersectional conversation that emerges from his practice, which gives us this kind of varied, you know, multifaceted way of thinking about identity, right? It's sort of necessarily complicated by many different factors. And so I like that. But most significantly, I think, one of the reasons why the show is so convenient for us to have is that we could reproduce so many of the works ourselves, right? So nothing had to be shipped, which is, you know, amazing for our carbon footprint and for the planet, of course. But it meant that we didn't really have any sort of solid sculptural presences in this space. And so we worked with the exhibition designer, Sam Aceby, to create these custom structures that you see in the space, these colored structures, you know, a bit of a nod to Bauhaus and to the Italian Brazilian modernist Lina Babardi and a few other kind of references that we had going through our conversations with Aries. And we really wanted to highlight something that was very tactile, very material. And Aries also has this interest in synesthesia, this sort of cross-sensory correspondence between, you know, like visuals and sound, for example. So I felt like it brought a kind of material quality, a sumptuousness to the exhibition that was missing, I think.
Yeah, I feel like there's so many works in the exhibition that have kind of representations of tactility, you know, photos of tactile objects, but to have something that really is, as you know, you want to touch it, you want to touch these beautiful textile works, and to have it kind of does just, I think, enrich the show as a whole. It feels like a really strong yeah, strong inclusion of a artist with domestic ties. But there are so many artists in the exhibition. I mean, I'm not sure of the exact number, but it's definitely in that too long to read all of their names on the radio link.
Definitely.
But are there any particular works that you'd like to draw attention to?
I mean, Beyond Erasers, I think that's one that locals are really going to enjoy. People with various interests in, you know, in craft and art and queer histories and migrant stories and all those kinds of things. But I think the screening program is an interesting one to check out. We have a sort of rolling program between 1 week and 2 week screenings of either a compilation of works of short films or a feature length work. And I think that's one that I'd encourage people to come in and check out. Again, also maybe too many names to name on the radio, but there are a few projects in there that I think would be great to sort of spend time with. And what I love about the moving image is that I like so much other stuff that we have in our lives. It's almost impossible to consume, simultaneously as other things. It sort of demands your full attention in a way. Well, at least I like to think so. And I think that screening room is a space where you can kind of just commit yourself to being immersed in that experience.
Yeah, the work I was watching in there was you told me the name before off air, but I'm still having it. Is it Kao?
Guimarães.
Yeah. And that's this 90-minute film, which it's just incredible. It's these three artists working as a collective traveled around Brazil filming people in fields that were kind of disappearing. And they made the film from like 99 through 2001. And it's a mix of 16mm, 8mm, and I think mini DV. So it's got this wonderful visual quality. And then you're watching these just fascinating little vignettes. Like I watched one was about a man who in the pre-war era was responsible for being the voiceover artist of the silent films that were traveling from Japan to the Japanese community in Sao Paulo. And just absolutely amazing. He's talking about, how he would spend 3 months watching these films and then he would, to prepare his script, and then he would stand at the back of the room and provide all the voices. And then another one was this man talking about how he maintained the kind of ceramic communication system for the train lines if the phones ever went down. So it was kind of a cup and string system, but more durable. Just really interesting stuff, and you can just get really lost in it.
Yeah, it's a great work.
While I've got you on the line, what else is happening at Te Uru that people should know about?
So we have on at the moment, we have a solo exhibition by Cora Allen Wycliffe, which is the culmination of her work during the McCann House residency at Parepuia. And it's this extraordinary body of work where she's used Finwa pigments from the local area, some of which make for unlikely results. I think some of the colors in the palette are quite unexpected, or they have been for quite a lot of people. So we have that on in our gallery 4 and 5 spaces, and I think it's a really beautiful exhibition, really sensitively curated and brought together by the artist and my colleague, Connie Brown. And then we also have another collaborative project, which is with Yuki Kihara and Katerina Teiwa. And that's the Barnaba Project, which is accompanied by Tikanias. Barnaba Project looks at the history of the Barnaban Islands and the mining of phosphate throughout the 20th century, the subsequent degradation and depletion of that island in the Moana. And it's a really harrowing story, actually, when you think about the sort of details of it. But it's been leavened by this project, Tikanias, which is the product of several workshops that have been run by the Barnaban Christian Fellowship and Yuki and Kati. And what you see in Tikanias, which is in our Learning Center gallery, is the culmination of different workshops and the efforts of different makers sharing their the cultural knowledges, the material histories. So it makes for a very, very beautiful, sumptuous, colorful exhibition for people of all ages, all levels of, you know, understanding of art and craft. And yeah, I think it's a really lovely complement to the main exhibition, which is in Gallery One, which has been touring for quite some time. It went to MTG down in the Hawke's Bay, and it was at Carriage Works in Australia, which is where it originated. And I know that Yuki, who's currently representing New Zealand at Venice, is making plans for it to tour throughout the Moana. So I'm really glad this is a project that we could host. And, you know, we've had several people from the Pacific Island community come through and see it and yeah, take in some of the messages and share some of the stories.
Well, thank you so much for speaking to me this morning.
My pleasure.
Yeah, we were saying also just before off the air that with the buses now half price, there's no reason not to head out. It's cost me about $1.20. yeah, so there's so much going on at Te Uru. And
exactly.
Yeah, it's always great to check in. Yeah, thank you so much. Have a lovely rest of your weekend.
You too, Theo. Thanks for having me.
We're going to jump into some Obong Jaya now. This is Tinko Tinko, Don't Play Me for a Fool. You're listening to Art Bank.
95 BFM's Art Bank.